Hello, my dear yet unknown friends, wherever and whoever you are. I'm Peter Resnick, and welcome to the Dr. Peter Resnick's Toolbox. This is my very first hour on the Progressive Radio Network, and here is what I want to do today. I want to introduce myself and the work that I do to you, and then I want to talk about the subject I chose for our first meeting. But before I start, something came to my mind just before I was about to do this show. So I want to share it with you. I hope I see how I can pull it together. I hope you watched the movie Scent of a Woman. If you didn't, it's a must. It's really a masterpiece. There, a character played by Al Pacino, a retired blind colonel, gives this incredible speech at the end of the movie. In one part of the speech, he goes, "There were times I knew what was right, but I did not do it because it was hard." Now, 10 days ago, Gary Null, the founder of PRN, called me. We haven't been in touch for a couple of years, so we caught up on the news in our lives. And then he asked me to do this show, to become a host of a show at Progressive Radio Network. After our conversation, I checked out the site and looked at the names of those who are hosting different shows. Most of them, frankly, I did not know. But I surely recognized the name of one of the hosts, that is the psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Bregan. His show is on Wednesday, I think. And I thought, I know what Gary has been doing for years. I know him for more than 20 years with his radio shows, videos, and books. He spoke about and speaks about vaccination, medical treatments that kill more than cure, about corrupt politics and politicians, about greedy chemical companies that destroy the planet, covering every burning issue of the time. And I know Dr. Bregan's work. I have many of his books in my library. For decades, he has been fighting to liberate psychiatry from its drug addiction. Both Gary and Peter have been doing this, doing something that is hard. And they have been speaking the truth. And it's not only hard. Unfortunately, these days, it's not safe. And yet they dare to speak the truth. Now, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm in my mid-60s. But honestly, I feel like a kid who was invited to be in a company of courageous grown adults. And I'm absolutely thrilled about it. That's what I wanted to share with you. And now, once again, welcome to my toolbox. You may wonder, how did I come up with this weird name for a show, the toolbox? Well, I have a hammer and nails and the pliers and a table saw. Just kidding. Seriously, when people call and say to me, such and such person recommended that I talk to you, but please explain, what kind of therapy do you do? Most of the time, I tell them the homepage of my website, drpeterresnick.com, says mind-body integrative therapy. But frankly, I don't see myself as a therapist. It's not that something was wrong about being a therapist. For example, Dr. Bregan is a fantastic, loving, caring therapist. And I hope that people feel empathy as they talk to me. But I view myself more as a teacher. Regardless of whatever you are suffering from, depression or constipation, asthma or anxiety, cancer or relationship problems, I teach you concrete tools on how to get to a better place or, God willing, become completely well. So for 43 years of my practice, I collected a lot of tools. I am kind of a giant toolbox. I teach people the tools. And if you practice, you see the results. That's what usually is my response. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, my specialty is mind-body integrative approach to healing. I view each person as a unique organism living simultaneously in multiple realities, physical, emotional, mental, social, spiritual. And the conflict or an imbalance on one of the levels of a person's reality is mirrored as an imbalance on all other levels. Let me give you an example. These days, if a person suffers from constipation, he or she goes to see a physician. But if they are depressed, they go to see a psychologist or a social worker or a psychiatrist. But both problems, the constipation, assuming that they eat more or less healthy diet, and the depression are two facets of the same issue. And the issue is the inability to let go, to release what is not needed inside. Look, when a person is depressed, he or she is not depressed about the future. A person who is depressed is attached to and has difficulties with letting go of something that happened. Whether it is the sadness about the circumstance they find themselves in the present time, or regret, guilt, remorse about something they have done in the past, or some loss that they experienced. And the physical expression of the same issue may be constipation, or if the feelings are very deep and persistent, the person may develop more serious problems. Another example is anxiety. It's considered to be a feeling or an emotion. And of course, with these kind of feelings, people go to see a psychologist again. But the truth is, it's also a physical event that is happening in the body. Anyone who experienced anxiety will tell you their palms are sweating, heart is racing, the body is shaking. These physical events must be addressed simultaneously. And what I'm saying does not come out of some theory I read about. It comes as a result of observation of thousands of cases I worked with. For 15 years, I was a staff member of the Shakta Center for Complementary Medicine, a big medical facility treating cancer and other serious physical illnesses with alternative modalities. Over and over again, I interviewed those patients and found most of the time they dealt with serious unresolved emotional conflicts. What conflicts? And what conflicts correspond with what illness is a very interesting question, but that subject requires a separate show. And I will do just that in the future. I'm not the only one who noticed the correspondence between our inner life and our physical problems. In fact, the father of Western medicine, Hippocrates, said 2,500 years ago, "I would rather know what sort of a man has a disease than what sort of a disease a man has." He understood that people, the way people live their lives mentally, emotionally, is as or even more important for the outcome of the treatment than their physical symptoms. And 600 years before Hippocrates, King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes, "As the man thinks in his heart, so he is." And this is not only the ancient wisdom. Today, I know many wonderful doctors who share these ideas with me. And God willing, I will bring some of them on this show. Also, in the future talks, I will share with you stories of my experiences working with many problems and the tools I utilize, the tools you may find useful for your own needs as a patient or as a practitioner. So let me tell you a little bit about the tools I use in my practice. None of them, none, are based on some psychological theory. You see, psychology, with all the theories about why people are the way they are all but intellectual guesses. The truth is, we may never know why people suffer. Whatever guess we'll make, we may then think, oh, maybe something else happened before that. And maybe if you believe in past lives, it happened, comes from the past life. Who knows? We don't know why some people can just shrug off a painful experience while others fall apart, get ill mentally or physically. The only unquestionable reality is the pain itself. And the person must deal with this pain in the now, regardless of the origins of the problem. So the tools that I use in assisting people with their disorders are means, or better word, probably mechanisms provided to us by nature. They are all part of our human inheritance, not just a theory, just like physical organs. they are part of our nature, without which we cannot live. We are born, for example, with the heart, with the liver, skin, eyes, legs, etc. Every organ of our body has its place and function. Also physical senses, sight, hearing, smell, what else, taste and touch, are there for us to explore and survive in our external environment. So our inner senses, such as reason, will, or they call it here willpower, imagination, night dreams, and intuition, are there for us to deal with our inner or internal reality, and also to deal with each other. To share with you about these five inner senses and their value, and how I apply each of them as a healing tool, will take at least 5 hours. Yes, I need 5 full shows to introduce them all to you. And I intend to do that in the future, but not today. Today I want just to give you a short overview of each, and then to go to the main subject of today's show. Let me start with the reason. The reason is our ability to understand things and events, and see the connection between things and events. If right now, for example, you hear, whoa, 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 you will not say to yourself, why is Peter making these noises? You will understand that the sound comes from a siren, probably a fire truck is rushing, there is a fire somewhere. Or you see a person slam the door. You understand that the person is frustrated. A cognitive psychology, cognitive behavioral psychology, rational emotive psychology are all based on the reason. Nothing is wrong with these approaches. It's just that they cannot resolve all problems. You cannot squeeze every problem into that theory. But it's a very good approach to use logic and rationale. At times, reason works very well. The other day, for example, a client of mine came for a session fuming, and it was just right after Thanksgiving. I hate my brother-in-law. I hate him with passion, he was saying. He's such a show-off. He's rude. He's noisy. He takes over and bullies everyone. I say, tell me, Alex. I'm making up the name. I say, tell me, Alex. Was it the first time that he behaved this way? Alex said, of course not. I say, well, if he behaves like that, if you really don't appreciate this person, why do you spend time with him? Just don't socialize with him. I said, what do you mean? This is my wife's brother. I cannot. She will insist that I go. I said, well, you share with her how you feel and discuss with her going, maybe going less. He said, no, I cannot talk to my wife. She will eat me alive. And I said, Alex, you're making an error. You think you have a problem with your brother-in-law. You don't even have a problem with your wife. You have a problem with Alex. You have difficulties speaking up about what is important to you. Who else can you share with this, not your partner in life that you chose for all life? You have to learn to speak up. So this is all logic. Just let's move on to the next tool. I just wanted you to understand one of the approaches. Again, as I said, it's not psychological approach, it's just makes sense, it's reason, it's logic. So the next tool I utilize, it is willpower. What I discovered in the early years of my practice, and I was always a solution-oriented therapist, was that people may have an idea of what they want to achieve. They may get the tools they need to get there, and yet they're still not accomplishing it. They don't accomplish what they claim is the most important thing in their lives. And that is because they lack the strength of will to follow their commitment to use the tools to get what they want. So in In the late 90s, I developed the WIT, Will Integration Training. For 12 weeks, I give people assignments of physical actions and mental exercises, which are designed to do just that, build their willpower. So the next tool I want to mention is imagination. It's a very interesting tool. Again, we are born with imagination. Nobody taught us to imagine. But imagination, see, our intellect can be used to edit, to make up stories, to rationalize, fragment, deny, or misrepresent what's going on, to justify for ourselves. People make up stories all the time. But spontaneously appearing mental images during a guided mental journey always display a complete and unbroken reflection of one's internal inner experience. So one of the valuable aspects of this natural mechanism that God provided us with is that it can be used as a technique for inner exploration, learning what is deep inside of us. Another aspect of imagination is that it is a link between our mind and our body. It can be used, since it's a link, you can use imagination to direct nutrients to the parts of our body where they are needed. Let me give you my favorite example. Imagine you are turning around the corner and you see if you need to catch a bus, and the bus is about to move. The last passenger is going in and you are within 10 yards from the bus. What happens? Boom, you run. That's all. You don't say to yourself, I need norepinephrine to be released in my brain to stimulate my heart. I need sugars and fats to pour from my liver into my bloodstream to provide more energy to my muscles. None of that. You don't need to know physiology or neurophysiology. All you want is you want to be at that bus. So there are two things that happen at that moment. One is an impulse of will. I want to be there. The other one is the image of the space between you and the bus. Because if you saw the bus being 1 mile, half a mile away, you would not be running. You would not be thinking that it's possible. So the image of the space between you and the bus and the impulse of will, I want to be there, stimulates all those physiological functions and hormones to make it happen. So the same thing, if a person is not well, if the exercises are designed the right way, through the will impulse, setting up the intention, and using the imagination, you can stimulate healing. And there are at least three more areas of imagination being used as a healing tool. Again, I will share with you all this in the future talks. Now, night dreams, quickly. Moses Maimonides, 12th century Hebrew theologian and a physician. By the way, he was a personal physician to Sultan Saladin. Moses Maimonides said, tell me what your night dreams are, and I will tell you not only who you are, but who you can become. Indeed, the night dreams are not only a reflection of where we are in our lives at the moment, but it's also a blueprint of where we're going. The wonderful thing about a night dream is, as a blueprint, you can enter the blueprint and make changes. And as you make changes in that blueprint, in your inner life, you inform your future, your tomorrow, with new information. And then in the physical world, you begin to act in a different way. I will have a whole series of talks about night dreams. Maybe also I will make it interactive. First, I will give a few lectures about night dreams. And then I will, and I was told by organizers of the shows that I can give a telephone number and you will be able to call in and share with me your night dreams, those of you who are interested. And I will work with the night dreams right here live on the show. And finally, intuition. This is our inner voice, which tells us 100% of the time exactly what to do and when to do it for our benefit. But we need to know how to recognize this voice from among many other voices that we have in our heads. There will be a show about intuition as well. And that is all that I wanted to tell you about my work so far. If you want to send me an email with your feedback about the whole show today and or suggestions, you may send me an email. My address, email address is peter1818resnik, R-E-Z-N-I-K, at gmail.com. And now, when I was thinking about the subject I wanted to discuss during my first hour on this network, I looked at the list of different lectures and courses and workshops I gave over the years, hundreds of them. And I realized that although many of those subjects are very interesting, and I definitely want to talk about them in the future, none of them is as relevant as something else, something that I did not speak yet about, something that is concerning people right now, and that is the uncertainty of life. And so comes the title for our talk today, Living in Times of Uncertainty. Now, my teacher of blessed memory, Madame Colette Bouquer-Muscat, said, nothing of true value happens unless you make a leap into uncertainty. She taught us that uncertainty is good. The uncertainty is a springboard for creativity and growth. Ladies and gentlemen, we happen to live right now in a very uncertain world. The uncertainty about our health with all this COVID-19 thing, the political uncertainty, the financial ups and downs, the environmental disasters. Excuse me, let me have a sip of my tea. Fresh ginger with lemon and honey. It's delicious. So the crisis and the unpredictability seem to be happening on all levels. It's interesting that the Chinese hieroglyph that stands for crisis is the same one that stands for opportunity. And the Hebrew word nega, Nun Gimel Ein, meaning the affliction turned around, becomes oneg, meaning blessing. So is this uncertainty a blessing or is it a curse? Let us look at the greatest uncertainty we all face these days. It is, of course, COVID-19, which produced most of the fear and the feeling of the uncertainty about life. The greatest fear of all, as the psychiatrist Irving Yalom wrote many years ago, is about fear of death. COVID-19, with the death count, which the news stations flash in front of our eyes nonstop, reminds us of our mortality. COVID-19 scares people by the possibility that they may die. I'm not going to discuss the accuracy of the information we are getting from so-called news stations. I believe most of them in reality are propaganda stations. It's easy for me, by the way, to recognize this. I lived for 27 years in the former Soviet Union, but that's a whole other topic. Perhaps one day we'll talk about it. But there is a possibility that the affliction of the COVID-19 will indeed become a blessing of waking us up. To what? Waking us up to the truth. The truth about life. Many people feel scared and uncertain about tomorrow because before COVID-19, they lived with the illusion that they were safe. Here is some statistics. Let's take a random year. Here I have a paper. In 2017, in USA, we had 169,936 accidental deaths. Almost 170,000 deaths. Mind the words, accidental deaths. Here, 64,795 people died in 2017 from poisoning, food poisoning, drug overdose. 40,231 people died from motor vehicle accidents. 36,338 people died from falling, probably hit their head or whatever. 5,216 people died from suffocation. 3,786 people died from drowning, flames struck by lightning, firearms, and so on. The list goes on, and altogether we have 170,000 people. All these people got up in the morning. They had plans for the day, for the upcoming year, made promises, made reservations, put aside more money for a rainy day, and boom, it's over. Why am I telling you this? To scare you even more? No, just to remind you that there was never certainty. I repeat, we lived with the illusion that there was such a thing as certainty. I believe we adults, in order to live a healthy life, must absolutely accept that the only thing that exists is uncertainty. I remember now, my daughter now is a young, grown woman, but I remember she was, I think, 5 years old, and I was getting ready to go to work. We lived in Rockland County. I was walking to my car, and my daughter said, "Daddy, tell me a story before you go." And I said, "Lavinka, I will tell you the story when I come back." And I walked away. I got in my car, started driving. And suddenly I thought, I just lied to my daughter. I may never see her again, or she may never see me again. I don't know what will happen 5 minutes from now. And this is absolutely true. Life is unpredictable. Children cannot deal with uncertainty. So this kind of a lie was necessary. But as adults, to be healthy, we have to know that life is uncertain. As my professor in graduate school, Dr. Chazen, and that's why I think I remember his name all these years, he said, anything can happen and does. Depending on your worldview, you have a different interpretation of why anything can happen and does. But there is no question that the statement is true. So let's look at the possible worldviews. There aren't really too many. There are probably two major ones. One is that a worldview of an atheist. And the atheist holds the idea that consciousness is a dance of molecules in our brain. There is no creative force that underlies the fabric of the universe. Things happen at random, anything can happen, and there may or may not be any connection between events or people. The other worldview is that the world is a place of meaning. That is, it's an opinion of most major spiritual traditions. Everything is connected with everything else. And nothing happens by chance. And not only spiritual traditions say that. For example, quantum physicist David Bohm wrote, I think I have it right here, Universe and Implicate Order. David Bohm wrote a long time ago that there is an implicate order underlying all reality. And theoretical physicists of today, Fred Alan Wolf, echoes Bohm in his book, Spiritual Universe. The universe is self-aware and interested in development of all parts of its being. Or, as a psychologist, Martha Crampton, said so beautifully, we participate in a meaningful universe structured to facilitate evolution of consciousness. Isn't it beautiful? So if you're an atheist, you are well aware that anything can happen and does. And anything could have happened in the past. But till this moment, you were fortunate or prudent enough to stay alive. You heard me speaking the statistics of the amount of accidents in the United States, right? So you could have been one of those. But you were lucky. It did not happen to you. And hopefully, it will not happen in the future. You need to take all the precautions not to get, for example, COVID, and then just relax, because it's not predictable. So far, you escaped a chance to be poisoned, to die from a crash, to die from a fall, gas, fire. And if you are under the age of 60, you have much greater chances to die from all those than from COVID. Enjoy every day of your life as if it were your last one, because indeed it may be. Or you may enjoy another 50 or 60 years of your life, or 70 years. There is no way to know. So you may as well have fun while you're here and not waste time on something that you cannot foresee. And if against all logic, you're still freaking out at the end of this hour, I will give some mental exercises that may be helpful. Now, if you are a follower of the other worldview, that there is a greater order in the universe, and nothing happens by chance, it is even easier and simpler. Just get back to what your spiritual traditions teach, because most of them say pretty much the same. I can tell you what my tradition, Judaism, teaches. And 3.9 billion people on our planet, that is 55% of the world's population, are either Christian or Muslim, which originated from Judaism, and they have pretty much the same view on the issues of why we live and why we die. We are taught that our health, how we live, how long we live, when we die, how much money we make, none of that depends on us. Every action we take, every thought we have, all is taken into account. All is calculated. And we are taught whatever happens is with God's approval and is ultimately to our benefit. It is, if it is your time to go to the other side, I mean, you will go, no matter how much you protect yourself. If it's not your time, you will be saved even during a horrific catastrophe. Of course, it is our responsibility. We must do the best we can do in everything we do. But the outcome is not in our hands. For example, it's our responsibility to do what is necessary to take care of our safety and basic needs. There is a wonderful Arabic proverb, trust in Allah, but do not forget to tie the camel to the tree. But once you did what you needed to the best of your knowledge, just let it go and celebrate life. Do not hold back. Because of what? What if? At one point, actually, I wanted even to write a book, Breaking the what-if syndrome. What if and what if it not? And you will base on your whole life, your way of being on what if. If you want to do something, do it. Fall in love and give without holding back. And what if it ends and you feel pain? I heard it many times. I will never be in a relationship. I don't want to be hurt again. Welcome pain, knowing that it means that you are alive and able to feel that strongly. To the degree that we can feel pain, we also can feel joy. And you do not know what's next. You don't know what's around the corner. Try that new project. Apply for that job. All that you can get is yes or no. But then you will know that you gave your best shot. The worst is to realize about some potential that not only has not been realized, but wasn't even attempted. In life, it is important to burn, not to flicker. So there would be no regrets. My most favorite playwright, I think I quote this person more than anybody else, was George Bernard Shaw, who said, "When I die, I want to be all burned out." And he lived a full life. We cannot stop living because of the threat of getting COVID. We can take information and do our best. By the way, in March, I share with you a little personal story. In March, I had corona. I had COVID-19. How do I know? Because I went through the whole problem with fever and so on. Thankfully, one thing I did not have is problem with breathing. And that's because my sister taught me yoga and I did a lot of breathing and she forced me on Skype to do yoga and to do the breathing exercises, even when I was going through this high fever for 10 days. And my nephew Oleg, who is a medical doctor, was kind of monitoring how I was doing, telling me what to do and so on. And I survived. It was not easy. But so what do you do when something like this happens or you're afraid of something like this happening? You either begin to look over your shoulder, watch every step, or say, what do I do? What do I do now? So I made a decision to strengthen my immune system. I've been an athlete all my life, but not enough. So I started doing exercises. By the way, I would love to invite this person for this show, and I will try. Wim Hof, a guy from Netherlands, and he teaches this particular breathing exercises, and he teaches that you have to, and I do take cold showers and expose yourself to cold. And I'm doing this. I exercise on my terrace every morning in the last 3 months. And the weather has been getting worse, meaning not worse, but cooler and cooler. There were days when it was 33, 32 degrees and windy. And the first 5 minutes I'm standing there and saying, I'm crazy. What am I doing? And then after 5 minutes, you feel so energized. It's amazing. And thank God I never caught a cold, never running nose. So, and I believe that, is it mental or is it physical? It's both. I'm building my confidence that I'm okay. And that's what Wim Hof teaches. And again, I really do my best if I can invite him for this show. He has a whole talk about COVID-19 and how you can strengthen your body, you can strengthen your immune system and meet any challenges that your body is exposed to. Now, and what if you are listening to me now and thinking, yeah, it's easier said than done. I wish I could relax and enjoy the uncertainty, but I cannot. I just cannot stop worrying. Okay. That's okay. I'm telling you, you are not alone. I talk to so many people. Many people understand and feel the same way. Understand the situation in life and feel scared, even though logically they understand that there is a limited amount of stuff what they can do, and then, you know, whatever happens, happens. You have to make a decision that you will do your very best, and then you don't stop living. But if you still have those invasive thoughts, but though you decided, okay, I'm doing my best, and then I'm living my life. Remember, I am a toolbox, so I have a tool for you. Here's what you do. First, you recognize that you have no control over these bad thoughts. By the way, it's the same thing with any thought, any negativity. You recognize that you have this thought and you have no control over this thought coming. I don't know how they determined it, but I read, maybe I heard some psychologists or psychiatrists talk about it, experimental, I think, psychologists, that the speed of our thought is 1/150th of a second. So you really cannot stop a thought. Boom, you already have it. You don't have control over it. What you do have control over is what you do once you become aware of that bad thought or those bad thoughts. You can start dwelling on them, and most of the time, these thoughts are repetitive and not constructive at all. So what happens? The moment you give, and again, the psychologists, experimental psychologists, determine that it takes you 1.5 seconds of focusing on the issue where it begins to grow. That is, it begins to expand. Expand into something that you already were thinking. Again, remember that repetitive thought that I said? Or it can become a creative thought of doom and gloom. But once you have a negative thought and you gave it time, 1.5 second of focus. Remember, energy, my teacher of Tai Chi many years ago said, energy flows where attention goes. So you have a bad thought and you give it attention, and your whole energy is being drained. Those of you who know what kinesiology is, it's muscle testing, you know. You can have, you extend your arm and somebody pushes it down. And if you have a positive thought, you will find that your arm is strengthened. And then you shift your mind and you think about something negative and you cannot hold your arm back up because the energy is drained. So if you permit yourself to focus 1.5 seconds on that negative thought, it begins to take over. 1.5 becomes 3, 5, 7, and here you go. Your energy is drained and you are anxious. But what I suggest, the moment you have a negative thought, the moment you recognize that that thought came, here is what you do. You absolutely do not go into the content of that thought, but you simply breathe out. Remember, you start with breathing out. It's super important. You will say, wait, how can you breathe out without breathing in? I am telling you, you always can breathe out. For example, you know that we speak on exhalation most of the time, right? Look, right now I am telling you a whole sentence and I will still have some air to breathe out. Listen. You see? So the moment you become aware of the negative thought, I want you to exhale. Do not inhale. You breathe out through your mouth slowly. What it does, it stimulates your parasympathetic nervous system. In fact, it stimulates a quieting nerve called vagus, which goes from your medulla to the lungs, heart, and stomach. So You breathe out slowly, very slowly, as much as you can. And then as you breathe in, you mentally say, I am now aware of, notice it's five words. And as you breathe out, you say mentally, letting go of all thoughts that do not serve me. Notice it is 10 words because you want to breathe out slower than you breathe in. That's how you maintain the dominance of parasympathetic nervous system. Remember, sympathetic nervous system is excitation. So those people who say to you, oh, relax, take deep breaths, it's a big mistake. Because when you breathe in, and how do people begin to take deep breath? They inhale deeply. And it doesn't work. They actually get more excited. So you need to breathe out. By the way, those of you who are smokers and say, oh, smoking helps me, smoking doesn't. When you inhale, 25% of the nicotine goes in your brain, and the brain produces norepinephrine that increases your heart rate, so it makes you more excited. So then why so many people say, no, for sure I feel better when I take a couple of puffs and I'm stressed, I relax. You know why? Because what do you do when you inhale a cigarette? You pull in, and then you go, you slowly exhale. And then norepinephrine reaches the brain, the heart rate increases, and you need what? Another puff to calm yourself down. But what really calms you down is just that. Slow breaths out. That's all. So breathing out slowly, breathing in normally. If you want to prolong this relaxation, I can suggest something else, because sometimes people are so, now with all this multitasking, you know, people do 10 things at the same time, which is very unhealthy. But what happens is if you begin to repeat this, remember again the words, I am now aware of, as you breathe in and as you breathe out, letting go of all thoughts that do not serve me. Then again, in, I am now aware of, letting go of all thoughts that do not serve me. And if your mind begins to wander, because even though you are saying it, you're saying it automatically, so you have a chance to think about something else. No, occupy your mind. Stay on that mantra. So which means when you breathe in and say, I am now aware of, I want you also to imagine that as you're breathing in blue light from the blue sky. And every time you breathe out and say, letting go of all thoughts that do not serve me, think or imagine that you are breathing out gray smoke or blackness or any negativity, but think about the color. Breathing in blue light, breathing out darkness that you do not need in your body. So as you do this, you will begin to feel more relaxed. All you need to do is to take 8, 9, 10 the most of this kind of breaths. So what? It will take you what? A minute and a half, 2 minutes? Is it a big investment for the quality of the rest of your day? And even if you need to do it 5 times a day, so you do it, so it takes you 10 minutes. Instead of ruining hours. Sometimes people spend all days in agony. So this is one assignment. The second assignment. Every morning as you wake up, just sit up. Don't get up. Sit up. And say to yourself mentally, thank you, God, or universe, or nature, or the wisdom of my body, as long as you start with gratitude, for bringing me back to full awareness and providing me with another opportunity to experience life. I repeat, thank you, nature, for bringing me back to full awareness and providing me with another opportunity to experience life. And every evening, just before you go to sleep, you say mentally, "Thank you, God, for the day that passed, with all its experiences and lessons. Let me sleep and rest fully, so that tomorrow I have another brand new day with all its possibilities." And I'm about to finish this hour. My hour is almost up. I want, since I have a few minutes, I want to tell you something. And it's just to reiterate what I already said about living your life fully. For some reason, a story, I believe it's Anton Chekhov wrote, the story is called The Cantaloupe. And you remember Chekhov wrote in 19th century in Russia, and there were peasants mostly, and in the cities there were, how do you call them? In Russian it's called chinovnik, like an official. And there were different levels of officials, and some made quite good money. They worked for the government. And so the story is called Cantaloupe. And it's a story about this man who was an official. And he worked for many, many years as an official. And he was proud that he stayed at this job and progressed. And he was already at quite an advanced age. Those times they lived not long lives, but he was already almost 50 years old, and it was time for him to retire. But he calculated in his mind that he wanted to earn a certain amount of money and then retire and grow cantaloupes. He fantasized every night that one day when he has enough money, and it was 100,000 rubles that he wanted to save. When he has enough, when he has this 100,000 rubles, he will retire and grow cantaloupes. And deep inside, he knew, he had many accounts. He didn't calculate them all, but he knew that he had already over 100,000 rubles. But he continued working just to be on the safe side. And one day, he came home, went to bed, and died. That's the whole story. It sounds like a sad story, but it's a very encouraging story about living in the present moment and celebrating life and not delaying to some other time. Something else came to my mind. A beautiful poem written by Dana Markova, and I will try to recite it to you. "I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, make me accessible, to loosen my heart till it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which comes as seed goes out as blossom, and that which comes as blossom goes out as fruit." So if I were toasting now, I would say for the richness and fullness of life. Next week, next Tuesday at 2 o'clock, I think, I will talk a little bit more in depth about mind-body connection and the possibilities of total healing. I will talk about different tools for healing and the principles on which mind-body healing is based. Once again, if you want to send me an email with your suggestions and or feedback, my address is peter18resnik, R-E-Z-N-I-K, @gmail.com. And this is all I wanted to share with you today. Thank you for being with me on this journey. Peace to all who want to live in peace. Adelante, get up to the beat, adelante to the beat, ay segumba. Come on, baby, here it take it, move it, deep it, put the rumba. I don't wanna do the mambo, salsa, tango, cumbia, cha, cha, cha. Take me down to where you let the rumba get you moving side to side. Take me down to where the gong, gong, and the ding, 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 ding. Tan redondo, rumba, 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 rumba.
Founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.org.